Hi, I'm Paul. Verizon has been placing giant letters all over the country to get people to buy into their unlimited plan. Don't get hooked. Switch to Sprint Unlimited, $22.50 per month per line for 4 lines and get the 5th line free. Hurry to your local Sprint store, visit sprint.com/unlimited or call 1-800-SPRINT-1 today.
Savings until 10/31/18, then $38 per line per month for 5 lines with auto pay. Excludes taxes, surcharges, roaming, streams, your dedicated HD 1080p, music to 1.5 megabits per second, gaming up to 8 megabits per second, subject to credit, $30 activation fee, prohibited network use rules, and data deprioritization apply. Compared to Verizon Beyond Unlimited, carry features, different coverage and offer not everywhere, restrictions apply.
Yo, at Kaepernick 7 is so much better than Scott Tolzien. It's asinine that he's not on an NFL roster right now. Hashtag free cap.
You are locked on Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and as always you can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_Bball. We're back with another season preview podcast today. We're going to be looking at a team that is super young. There's a lot of questions that need to be asked and it is the Sacramento Kings. So to discuss everything about the Sacramento Kings, I am joined by the host of the Locked On Kings podcast and that is Jason Ross. Jason, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Josh. How are you?
I'm good. I'm ready to get into all things Kings. There's lots of changes. There's new veterans. There's about 10 guys under the age of 23, it feels like. It's just a very, very weird team, and I'm sure there's going to be excitement, but there's also going to be some confusion and some mistakes and lots of interesting stuff in the first full season post-DeMarcus Cousins. Let's start by talking about the guys that did arrive, and I think by far that the best player out of that group to arrive is George Hill, who signed in free agency. We would expect, and I don't think anyone should doubt this, that he will be the starting point guard for this team. He battled through a lot of toe injuries last season, but when he was healthy, we're talking about a top 40 fantasy guy. We saw that in Indiana when Paul George was out as well. He was a top 40 sort of guy. So George Hill comes in, Jason, to be the starting point guard, but people have some doubts. They think that by the end of the season that he's just a caretaker and that De'Aaron Fox will take over at some point this season. How do you view the signing of Hill and his role for the entirety of the season?
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what you said, Josh. I think initially he's coming in and that's his spot. I think he is the starter. I was a little surprised by the length of the contract. I could have seen maybe a 2-year deal with the first one guaranteed, second one with an option, but it's 2-year, or the first two are guaranteed. Third one, there's an option. And, you know, most teams trust veterans, and George Hill honestly is coming off his best season. So if he can do something like that, like he did in Utah, and stay healthy, it's obviously going to help the Sacramento Kings. So I think if everything goes as planned, he will play a majority of the games, obviously a majority. I won't even say a majority of the minutes, but will be the starter, a guy that can lead and lead by example for De'Aaron Fox, who they drafted. But I think, yeah, those starter minutes and probably the bulk of the point guard minutes, at least at the beginning of the year, I would expect to go to George Hill.
People don't realize how good George Hill is defensively, offensively, as a shooter. He can do so many different things. And when he's forced into roles where he needs the ball in his hands for more amounts of time, like, it works and he does things well. At the start of last season when Hayward was out, he killed it. He killed it when Paul George was out. But the injuries is what's really bothered him over the past 3 to 4 seasons. He's getting drafted 78 on Yahoo, 91 on ESPN, and that's sort of where he can be. He can be a top 50 guy if he plays 34 a night. I'm not sure he's going to be able to sustain 34 minutes a night over the course of the season just with the presence of Fox, but I think that he might start the year playing 33 minutes a night, and that might cut back at some point. And with the Kings having their own draft pick this year but not having it next season, there could be some Suns-like tomfoolery going on with some of these guys late in the season. We saw it last season with guys basically just alternating in the lineup. Costa Kufos, Tyreek Evans, Garrett Temple. It was one game on, one game off for all those veterans, and I think we might see some of that in March for Hill. But you're taking him late, you can get early top 50 production out of him, and I think you should feel pretty good about him in all areas. One of the other guys that's come across, and this is a guy I'm really excited about, Jason, that is Bogdan Bogdanovic, who is a 24-year-old rookie, I think he might be 25, who comes across from Serbia. He is not related to Bojan Bogdanovic. They come from different countries, and he's a completely different player to what Bojan is. So I always give my player comp for the sort of guy that he can be, especially statistically. What do you liken Bogdan to in terms of a type of player that he can be?
Yeah, I'm anxious at this point, Josh, because I don't know 100%. I've seen the film. I haven't watched all of his games. I saw a lot of him in the Olympics. I know in Eurobasket he was just playing recently. He's been playing well. I'm intrigued because part of me feels like his best position is the two, is the shooting guard. Buddy Hield is there too. They could share minutes. I'm wondering though if he gets more minutes at three, but I also see his ability to be a creator and a playmaker. I mean, he can get four or five assists a night. So it's a weird spot that I believe Buddy Hield could be a productive guy for the team and in fantasy. I believe Bogdanovich can be a productive guy for the team and in fantasy. But if they're sharing the minutes at the two, I don't know how productive they become. But if one of them gets the three spot and plays a lot of minutes there, it may hurt them as a team. But as an individual and in fantasy-wise, I think they could blossom. So I'm not exactly certain where that's going to go. I still feel like both their best positions are two. But we know basketball is kind of interchangeable now, and I'm not sure which route Dave Yeager will go, especially without – I don't really think the team has a legitimate starting three right now. Could they force one of those guys into that spot? That could still be something that happens.
Yeah, you're right. And I think that Bogdanovich is going to be good enough that he's going to force those minutes. I've heard people talking about the fact that he might push Buddy Hield for that starting two job. I'd be stunned if it happened, but I also think that I wouldn't be shocked if Bogdanovich turns out to be a better player than Hield, just with his ability to do more things than what Hield can do. You talked about his passing. He's quite a good defender. The guy that I liken him to is a worse Bradley Beal. An athletic, high percentage three-point shooter who plays the two, can defend decently above average, but also can handle the ball and pass, and his statistical similarities are similar. Like, he could have seasons of 15, 5, and 4 with 1.5 steals and 2 threes a game and do that fairly efficiently at some point in his career. I love him as a late pick in fantasy because there are those two positions. There's the two, which we assume he'll get, but there's tons of minutes at the three, and if he starts out like I hope he will, and I think he can, then there are big minutes there, and his game is super fantasy friendly. It's more fantasy friendly, in my opinion, than what Hield's is. Hield's more just a scorer, hits threes, doesn't contribute in those assist categories. His steal numbers are lower. Yeah, Hield has more efficiency, but I would take Bogdanovich over Hield if we're talking about equal minutes between the two. I just don't think we're going to necessarily be at equal minutes, but it is a possibility. It's not something that we can rule out at this stage.
Yeah, I think what's interesting too, I agree in the one sense that if this team were a better team, Josh, I think ideally Buddy Hield would be your backup at the two. There's nothing more. He could be a Jason Terry, a Manu Ginobili, a guy that comes off the bench, gets you 16, 18, maybe scores 25 in a night, might score 4, whatever, but he's your spark plug. But right now, he still might be the starting two. So when they get better, I think Buddy Heald's best role would be coming off the bench, and that could set up an ideal spot for Bogdanovich.
Bogdanovich is a great last pick in fantasy. Hield's going a bit early, 120, 113 on ESPN. I think that's sort of right where he needs to be. I'm not sure exactly how much upside he has, unless you're buying into the 48-plus percent he was shooting from the field in that time with Sacramento, which is obviously fantastic. His efficiency was through the roof. He upped a lot of his other stats as well in Sacramento, so he does have top 100 potential. I just don't fully buy into the Buddy Hield experience as being anywhere near a top 50 sort of a player. But at that spot, there is value there for him. And again, he was really, the difference between Pelicans Hield and Kings Hield was stark. It was one of the biggest changes in a player that we've seen throughout the course of the season. And you would have been pretty rapt to see Hield take that extra step forward when he came across as the centerpiece of that trade.
Yeah. I mean, and that was kind of the nice surprise. The Kings actually saw him as a Pelican shortly before the trade. And I remember he came in, and I wasn't really that impressed with him. But then when he came to Sacramento, it was like he had the green light. They needed him to score. He scored. He scored efficiently and did a lot of good things for them in the 25 games he was a King. So they're hoping for – and he works really hard. That guy is there early. He's shooting all the time, working on his craft. So big summer for him, but potentially he could have a nice season for the team.
Do you think he leads the team in scoring?
That would be my guess right now. I mean, I think he's the one that's most capable. I mean, Vince Carter's been a great scorer over his career, Zach Randolph too, but I don't feel like the minutes or the ability is still there to do that for those guys. And then who are the other candidates? I don't think it's going to be any of the rookies. And then you're looking at Willie Cauley-Stein or Scat. I mean, I think it's him, or maybe even Bogdanovich could be a sleeper one that comes in there. But I think Buddy Hield has the best chance to lead him in scoring, but that number might be 16, 15, 16, which is nice, but it's not crazy high.
I've got him projected exactly at 16 points per game for this coming season. Yeah. So I'm glad you agreed with me there without any prior knowledge of that. The other two veterans that they brought in from the Grizzlies, Dave Yeager, very familiar with Zach Randolph and Vince Carter. I know a lot of people that I've spoken to think that Randolph's coming in, he's going to start, and he's going to play 29 minutes a game. But the reality is he wasn't good last season. He was extraordinarily inefficient. He led the Grizzlies in usage and had a true shooting of about 48%, which for any player is bad, but for a big man is horrendous. You know, his defense has always been a concern. He doesn't jump, that's fine. He grabs his rebounds, he does that, but the efficiency really started to tail off. So where do you see Randolph's role on this team? Do you think that Jaeger will go, all right, this is a guy that I trust, I know I like my veterans, and he will start him or play him the bulk of those minutes and relegate Scal Labissiere to a backup role? Or do you think that Randolph will come and play that backup role that he played under David Fizdale last year and play low 20s in minutes because he just can't really do it for big stretches in large minutes anymore?
Yeah, this is another one of the mysteries. I know Jaeger's tendency is to lean on veterans, and I don't blame him for that, but I think the door is kind of open, as you said, Josh, because Fizdale did that move last year. So Randolph at least now has done it, accepted it, and did fine. At least, you know, he had some good playoff moments in that Spurs series coming off the bench. And so I think, you know, in the grab bag of the four and the five position for the Sacramento Kings, my guess is that Jaeger's going to split that, maybe play one younger guy with a veteran. So is that Willie Cauley-Stein with Kosta Koufos? Is that Scal with Zebo? Is it, you know, which route will he go? I my hunch is that Zach Randolph is going to come off the bench. That's just a hunch, but I feel like he's going to be certainly in the rotation, certainly in important minutes. And if the game is close, I would expect Zach Randolph to be on the floor in crunch time. But my gut is telling me I think he will start the season on the bench.
Is that the new iPhone?
Yeah, got it on T-Mobile. Fastest iPhone deserves America's fastest LTE network.
Introducing the amazing iPhone 8. It's the best iPhone yet, now on America's best unlimited network. For a limited time, save up to $300 on the amazing iPhone 8 after 24 monthly bill credits. And now join T-Mobile's iPhone upgrade program for free.
Eligible trade-in and finance agreement required. If you cancel service, you may lose promo credits. Contact us for details. Video at 480p. Small fraction of users over 50 gigs per month may have reduced speed. See store for details.
There aren't many players who are as overrated in terms of their average draft position for fantasy. He's getting picked at 80th in Yahoo and 87th on ESPN. For reference, last season he was the 174th ranked player. So the fine folks at ESPN and Yahoo drafting over there are expecting him to double his output from last season, which I can't even see getting anywhere close. The year before, when he played 30 minutes a game for Memphis, he was the 106th ranked player. So expecting him to turn back the clock to 2014 and play 32 minutes a night to even get anywhere near touching that level, I don't want anything to do with him in any sort of standard leagues. The minutes won't be there. He struggles in so many areas from a box score area, like points, rebounds, efficiency, what he used to be able to do. Can't do that anymore. He still gets his rebounds, but can't do everything else. And that is as wasted a pick as you could make at pick 80 to pick Zach Randolph in that situation. Now, you said that he's going to be an every night part of the rotation, and I agree. I've heard various reports about the other veteran that came across, 40-year-old Vince Carter. Some people thinking he's going to come across and start at small forward. Some people think he'll just be a better Mike Miller for this team, who played that role with Denver as an on-court mentor who sits there and trains all the young guys and really kicks their ass when they do something wrong. Like, what do you think of Carter because of that, I guess, lack of depth at small forward? Is he going to be a guy that plays, or are we going to see him really drop off from what we saw him last season do?
Yeah, he ended up having a decent season, certainly for Memphis last year. But that's the spot that is so open. And so if we go back to maybe mix and matching of playing Buddy Hield and a Scal, or Buddy Hield and Willie Cauley-Stein, two younger players, and George Hill in there, I feel like they need a little bit more of a veteran presence because, I don't know, let's say you open the night. Well, they don't start with the Warriors, but on a night you play the Warriors, someone's got to guard Kevin Durant. Not that Vince Carter can, but I don't want to see Malachi Richardson or Bogdanovich or Justin Jackson or some of these other guys that could potentially play three start there. So I think he's got an opportunity to start, but that could be something, Josh, where he literally starts and plays 14 minutes a night or 16. I mean, nothing that's – maybe some nights up to 20, 25 if he's got it going. He's still an efficient three-point shooter and can do some things, but he actually might have been a better fit around a guy like DeMarcus Cousins with his ability to pass and create for others and just spot up and shoot. But I think he'll still have his moments. Well, he'll have a highlight or two, and he's, you know, by all accounts, everything we saw him in Vegas and been around the team, he's just been amazing. Great guy. He's going to fit all the things they want as a veteran in a leadership role. What he's going to be able to do on the court, still a little bit of a mystery, but kind of a guy, again, going off hunch here, Josh, but I think Jaeger is going to start him. That's, again, my guess, but I feel like he may start him, but that's not a big minute fantasy guy by any means.
Yeah, look, if he starts, he'll do the Keith Bogan sort of thing and play that 15 to 20 minutes, and that's how I can see that happening, because I've got another guy, which we'll talk about a little bit later, who I think might have a chance at getting that starting role, but we'll run through the rest of these guys that they acquired. Jakarr Sampson, one of my, I labelled him as the worst player in the NBA about 3 years ago, but he has improved since then. So that was in his first season. He has improved. He's on a two-way, and Big Bad Jack Cooley also on a two-way. One of the most, terrorizing rebounders that you'll see. Just an absolute animal in terms of getting rebounds. But they're on two ways. They're barely going to play. Now, we want to look at the guys that left. Rudy Gay to the Spurs, Darren Collison to the Pacers, Ty Lawson's gone to China, Tyreek's gone to Memphis, Anthony Tolliver to the Pistons, Aaron Aflalo to the Magic, Langston Galloway to the Pistons, and Ben McLemore to the Grizzlies. So we're talking about a significant clean out from this team. And in addition to the free agents I talked about, they had a stack of draft picks as well. So let's talk to Aaron Fox. Let's talk straight away with him. Was that the guy that you wanted at pick five as a Kings person, that you were like, this is the guy that's going to fit perfectly with what we need here?
I think it is the perfect fit. They wanted him. He wanted to come here, which is really rare to have people that kind of signify that that's a spot that fits for them. If something weird happened, you know, where they were drafting, could they get him at five? There was some talk, he might go before them. But then when he was there, it made perfect sense. If someone else fell that would have created a difficult decision, maybe there was another angle. I know the Kings front office is going to say this, but the night of the draft, Vlade said that's who they would have taken number one. I'm not sure if I believe that, but they wanted him. They zeroed in on him. I think he makes a lot of sense. He is super quick. I mean, man, watching him live in Las Vegas, just that was so eye-popping how quick he can be. And he's, you know, he's just going to get better. He has to get better, but the point guard's such a valuable position in the league. And what's great, what I like, Josh, is years ago when this team, well, they've been struggling, but when they drafted Tyreek Evans, it was, hey, go save the team. When they drafted DeMarcus Cousins, hey, go save this franchise. That's too much to ask. Those two guys had good rookie seasons, and DeMarcus had a good run with the Kings. But now it's De'Aaron Fox, fit in, be a guy, develop into something. So they're not asking him to come in and start and be an all-star right away or be a rookie of the year. Just play. And I think that they're doing this the right way, alleviating the pressure on these young guys. And I really like him personally, and I think he's going to be an excellent fit for the team.
I think that he might see the court a little bit alongside George Hill as well, as Hill plays off the ball. I think we'll see that a little bit go small and push Hill to Bogdanovic down to the three in some of those lineups. But he is getting overdrafted as well, which happens often with rookies at pick 108 on ESPN. That's assuming that he's coming in and playing 32 minutes a night to start off, which he won't be doing. The shooting percentages from the field are going to be an issue. He gets assists. Yes, he'll get steals. We know that. The scoring, the three-pointers, the field goal percentage will be an issue. And I don't see any rationale for draft him in any 12 or probably even 14 team leagues this season, but he could be an interesting March, April type pickup guy if they do indeed start reducing Hill's minutes and playing Fox some of those big ones. But he will still be, like we saw this with a guy like, I'm trying to think of the guy who it was last season who started playing, Tyler Ulis, who started playing those big minutes for the Suns.
Right.
Putting up numbers, but for fantasy, he was still like the 110th ranked player over that time because he was just taking bad shots. He was super inefficient. And you know, while he looked good and playing minutes and putting up these numbers, I think that Fox could be in a similar mode there and have stretches where he shoots 35% from the field on like 16 shots for a couple of weeks in March and really does hamper you in that area. The other guys that they drafted, they traded out of that New Orleans Pelicans pick to get a couple of other first-rounders from the Portland Trailblazers. They selected Justin Jackson at 15 and Harry Giles at 20. We'll start with Jackson. You referred to him earlier. He's an older rookie who is a small forward, and we talked about the need they have there. I was decently impressed with him in Vegas, but I also don't think that he's going to be able to be an every-night contributor in the NBA given his talent level, his frame, and despite the need that they have at that position.
Yeah, he's a guy, when they drafted him, I said, all right, makes some sense, fills a need a little bit. But I looked at him as a rotation guy, and there's nothing wrong with that. Everybody needs people to be in your rotation. Watching him in Vegas, though, he did surprise me. And we, as you said, you kind of have to take that for what it is. But against the competition he was playing against, he was really good. And I think, as you brought up, Josh, being older, I think that helps him. A little bit of age, he's played in some big games at Carolina, played in the big moments and played well. He was a really nice surprise to me. So I don't know where ultimately he fits in, but that was a good showing for him. And with that three being seemingly wide open, hey, if he continues to have a good preseason and a good early part of the season, it's going to be tough to keep him on the bench.
He's not a great fantasy producer just for what his game is. Like, you know, low steals and block totals, not a high assist guy or rebounder. He can score, but not necessarily efficiently, not a great free throw shooter. So look, the whole package doesn't sound that appealing. So I don't really love him for fantasy, but he could develop into a player that, again, when we get to March, is playing bigger minutes and starts playing 28 a night and, you know, for a 2-week stretch and starts putting up some okay numbers. But he's not a high priority guy. He's not a high priority guy for me in dynasty leagues either, just because of the player he is. The interesting one is Harry Giles, a guy that was, you know, always in discussions to be the number one player in high school and through college, but multiple knee surgeries, struggled at Duke last season, and it's hard to find really any sort of role for him this season as he joins the Kings. Do you still hold out hope that he can at least do anything to recover from these knees, or does it just feel like that he's never going to be able to recapture the form that saw him be that such a highly touted college recruit?
Yeah, here's another one that's the kind of, I mean, I feel like this whole roster is a little bit of a mystery, but this one may be the biggest one, because I've had a lot of people on Locked On Kings, Josh, that have said, oh, there's no doubt he would have been the best player in this draft. I mean, convinced of that. And had he been in other drafts and healthy, he would be a number one. And so I hear that. I get excited about that. But everything, you know, I saw his Duke games, and then the Kings took extra care, didn't play him in summer league. He practiced but didn't play. I feel like they're going to take a lot of care with him here. So they're being patient. That's great, but it's hard when kind of out of sight, out of mind. And I hear what everybody else says. I believe him, but I don't know. He is the biggest mystery to me, because when I hear someone has the talent to maybe even be the best player in this draft, which I think is a great draft, but he doesn't play, it's just hard to see what he possibly can be. So if he's healthy, I'm going to go that he'll be good, but that's the biggest question. And I think the Kings medical staff felt good enough about drafting him, so I hope he's going to maintain his health for his sake and for their sake.
I think you're going to see a lot of him in Reno alongside Papianis in that front court. He's a good shot blocker, he's a good rebounder. He's shooting, it's not too bad. It does need a little bit of work, but he is an interesting sort of guy. And I think that if you're looking at that sort of area in dynasty leagues, like I'd be even inclined to just have a swing on him ahead of a guy like Jackson, just because I do think the upside is higher. The risk is obviously higher there in terms of him panning out, but we're talking about a guy that could be a starter, whereas Jackson you just project as maybe a sixth or seventh man, best case scenario. So there's definite risk associated with Giles in that situation. And then in the second round, they selected Frank Mason as a point guard, really to be the third point guard on this team. And like Giles and like Papianis, we're not going to see a huge amount of Mason this season. Really praised for his intangibles, but what can he actually bring to this team apart from that? Because, you know, second-round rookies aren't coming in and being leaders on teams straight away.
Yeah, no, I don't see the fantasy value. What they're hoping, the team loves him, absolutely loves him. Everything about him, the way he plays, the chip on his shoulder, the edge, his experience at Kansas, his story there, you know, was just kind of a guy. Then he became the college player of the year, all the experience he had there. And then he pushes De'Aaron Fox. He'll push George Hill. He'll be that kind of pain in the butt in practice. And, you know, this is a lofty thought, but some have said, hey, can he do something like Isaiah Thomas, picked 60th years ago for the Kings, worked his way into a 20-point-a-game scorer as a King, went to Phoenix, and then, of course, in Boston was an MVP-type candidate. So that's the super optimistic view. I don't see that happening, but it's the same kind of story where a guy who can really play probably is going to start the season either in Reno or certainly as third on the depth chart in the point guard position. But I think we'll practice hard. We'll be there. We'll get noticed. If there's an injury, he'll be effective. And I think he's the kind of guy that will push everybody. So you like those guys. Tough to keep him off the floor, but I don't know where those minutes are coming.
Where are we at with Malachi Richardson's hamstring? He suffered a severe injury with it last season, came back, and then seemed to injure it again in summer league. So it's been hard to find, you know, consistent reports on where he's at, but was it a serious re-injury in Vegas? Is he likely to be ready for camp in a couple of weeks' time?
Yeah, everything about that was precautionary from what I could gather. I was there for that game, and it didn't look bad. It was like he just walked off the court, and then it was he won't return, and then they shut him down for the rest of summer league. So I don't think it's nearly as serious as the one that he did before the All-Star break at Golden State. And another intriguing guy, because he has gotten a lot better. He's got the size to maybe take over the starting three spot. Just didn't get it just quite enough games. That's one of the regrets the team probably has of his injury, because, you know, the final 25 games, they experimented. They tried everything, and he would have been a guy that would have got a ton of run, a lot of opportunities, and they could have had a good look at what he could look like maybe in a starting role in 25 minutes. But they didn't get that opportunity. But of all things, he's a good shooter. I don't know about filling up the entire stat page, But that's a guy that's gonna make a little push for the starting three spot too.
So do you, given all these players that are around, do you think that he has a chance to be an every night part of the rotation? Because I think he might struggle to actually get into a 10-man rotation with his team.
Yeah, there's going to be someone that's left out. I mean, that's the reality. I mean, we were talking point guards earlier. Mason and Hill definitely have to play. If Bogdanovich and Hield play the two in some role or slash three, well, does Justin Jackson get left out? Vince Carter, Malachi Richardson, and then all the bigs that they have. I mean, Willie and Scal and Papiana, Zebo, Kufis. I mean, how do they play? And Garrett Temple, I even forgot. So they have a lot of depth, probably more depth than they've had. That's great, but you can't play everybody. You got to trim that to 9 or 10. So there's going to be, I think, two or three guys that probably could be playing that won't play. And I just don't know which. It really is kind of the mystery. It's not clear cut to me. I think you can make an argument for a lot of these guys. Coach will have to figure out which couple he's going to leave out.
The guy that you did just forget there, Garrett Temple, I think he's an intriguing option to be the starter at the three. We know that, you know, you talk about veteran leadership on this team, that he did a lot of that last season. He played a multitude of roles. He's 28 or 29 now. He still can hang with these guys athletically, like you talk about, matching up on a Kevin Durant. While it's not an ideal situation, that he can give him some problems in that area, taking on a Kawhi Leonard, Giannis, all these sort of guys who it might be a struggle for him, but I think he's going to fare better than Vince Carter, or he's going to fare better than Justin Jackson, or he's going to fare better than Bogdan Bogdanovic in that situation. Now, he's not an awesome fantasy guy, but he can get steals and he can hit threes, and with that position wide open, if he does succeed defensively, you're getting steals out of Garrett Temple is going to be interesting. So deeper league people want to pay attention to Temple and see how that spot pans out. He doesn't have high upside, but he could be a useful deep league contributor just because his defense may just keep him on the court for an extended period of time.
That's a great point. It's not even close last year who the best perimeter defender was on the team. It was Temple. I mean, he would guard Durant, but then he'd guard James Harden. Then he'd have to guard the Greek Freak. I mean, he guarded every different, Russell Westbrook. He had to guard every different type of great scorer, from the big guys, not big, but the bigger wings, to the quicker point guards. And he did really well against some of those guys. Now, again, that's not a sexy fantasy pick, but as far as what the team needs, an important role, Garrett Temple has to play. And that was one of the surprises to me, Josh, when they drafted, of all things, when they drafted De'Aaron Fox and Frank Mason, people were like, well, they're going to need a veteran point guard. I said, they do kind of have one. Temple has played that role, but it made more sense once they grabbed George Hill. But I thought that was a route they could go and then go after a starting three. But they went after George Hill. They felt they needed that. And so interesting, though, but Temple can be utilized in so many different ways, and he's another guy that's tough to keep off the floor.
Let's talk about the guys who might be a little bit sexy for fantasy for this team. And I think the number one guy we want to look at is Willie Cauley-Stein, who had his moments, significant moments, last season once Cousins was traded, because if we're going to be honest, he was pretty poor at the start of the year, struggled a lot, but at the end of the season, it felt like he'd cemented himself. Like, I am the starting center for this team now. I'm going to get my steals. I get my blocks. My field goal percentage is okay. I had some improvement from the line. He started scoring in bigger bursts. And I think he's got a chance to be, probably George Hill's got a higher upside, but Cauley-Stein could be the best fantasy option in this team. And you can get him. It's still a bit of a bargain outside the top 100 on ESPN. And that's even with me being conservative with his minutes projection, because as you said, like, Kufos is going to get some minutes. Randolph and Labissiere, like, those four guys are going to get minutes in that front court, and it's all to do with how Jaeger distributes it. Do you see Cauley-Stein as being the guy out of that foursome who gets the most playing time?
Yeah, I do. And I don't know where and what areas he's going to get better at, but I was really impressed with him in the final 25. I think the thing that happened when they traded DeMarcus Cousins, obviously they got some talent in return, but it's what opened up. So now all of a sudden, Scal had barely played. He was in Reno, just had a few different runs, and then all of a sudden we saw some flashes from him. Willie got a lot of run. First game out of the shoot, I think it was 29 and 14, just amazing. But then he backed it up with a 2-point effort. So, but what happened after that, like, I would say, Josh, the final 20 games, he was far more consistent
Scal.
So I think if he can do that, and I had said, hey, look, to me, Willie's goal in the final 25, this was very reasonable and doable. I said, can he get 14 and 7? That's not crazy. And he gets 29 and 12 out of the shoot. But I'm like, just steady, be 14 and 7. That's not all-star numbers, but that's good. That's year two. You're getting better. And if you can carry that over into year three, what I like, though, is he did a lot of other things that I didn't know was in his game. They used him at the high post. He was feeding passes there and back cuts and being a little bit more of a distributor. They ran more of the offense through him, and he had a little bit more depth to his game than I thought. Mid-range jumper was okay. His rim running, his ability to finish is his strength, his speed, running the floor. That's all what he can do, and he rebounded pretty effectively, protected the paint a little bit. So he had the well-rounded game that I think more people might be excited about what Scal can do, but I think Willie is already ahead of him and a little bit more consistent. And I think that's what is the appeal about Willie Cauley-Stein.
Yeah, I agree. I think Willie will be better this season. I think he'll be a better fantasy contributor. Scal had those big games, and people are always going to remember that fourth quarter he had against the Phoenix Suns. Yes. And yeah, he just dominated, but that was the Suns at that point, and they struggled significantly in the front court. We'll talk about Scal now. I think that he will struggle a little bit to get 30 minutes a night. I think he gets high 20s, but I don't think he's going to be getting 30. But there's a chance that he goes and plays 23 a night if they want to give more to Kufos and more to Randolph. I like him as a late pick in fantasy. Just see what happens with that last selection or even second last selection and see how that pans out. But his lack of defensive stats in comparison to a Willie Cauley-Stein does reduce his value there. We've talked already, they might split that front court up and put Cauley-Stein and Kufos together, but do you see LeBissiere as being able to push for the second most minutes in that front court situation?
Yeah, I think there's some potential for that, but what does that mean ultimately? How many minutes, what kind of production? And I think I'm a little bit torn on Scal. What bothered me, I say bothered me, I don't know if this is fair either, but I was so excited for him in the summer league in Vegas, and not that's the end-all be-all, but he had the run of 25 games. He was an older guy, quote-unquote older guy in Vegas. And I didn't think he had a very good summer league. He had a couple of flashes, but not as much. And the one thing I wonder about Scal is what's good and what's bad for me on him, Josh, is I think they could go two ways. I think they could make him a post player, like legitimately beef him up, make him a traditional post player. He's got that ability. Or a guy that can go out on the wing. He can handle the ball a little bit. I don't know that he's quick enough, but really make him a stretch big guy. He has the ability to do either one, but I don't think they've picked one, and I think they're kind of trying both, and I don't know, he's got a lot of different skills, but I don't know that he's great at one thing yet, so he's got to work on all of it. I think he will work hard. He does work hard. He's very coachable, and he's got a lot of potential, but I feel like he needs a little more nasty in his game. He's a really nice guy, and that's awesome, but I want to see a little more intensity and fire. He works hard, but I think if all that comes together, then I think that's where people would be excited about his ceiling.
Yorgos Papagiannis was the 13th pick last season, struggled immensely. He did provide us some highlights in Vegas, mainly punching on with Dragan Bender, which is that's definitely the most fun rivalry in the entire NBA. It's the weirdest one, but
random.
It is super fun to watch. And then Marquese Chris jump. It's going to happen all the time. It is super fun to watch. But I know some people are just like, no, he's just not an NBA player. Like, do you have a bit more hope for Papagiannis, or do you just think that it's just not going to happen with him?
A slight bit of hope, but I don't know. I don't see. He did get better. I mean,
he did.
When he was first on the season, the first couple of preseason games and a couple of games that he played early, it didn't look like he belonged at all. He dropped some more weight. He can move a little bit better. He's got okay hands. He can rebound. He's a presence. He can set screens. I mean, those are all nice things, but there's just people skill-wise on the roster that are better than him. So he's got to keep working, and he's still really young, so I guess I'll give him the benefit of that doubt. But, I wouldn't give up on him if I were the Kings, but I also wouldn't, I think it'd be foolish to say, well, he's going to be in the rotation and play 15 to 18. I don't see that. I mean, if there are injuries, sure, but if not, I could see him getting end of the bench time or maybe some more production in Reno.
Yeah, that's how I see him as well. He did have a couple of double-doubles late last season and a long stretch of games where he had a block for about 10 or 11 straight games and a couple of multi-block games. So he showed a little bit there and looked thinner again in Vegas also. But he's the fifth big at the moment, and that's just not going to enable him to see the court every night. He's just not going to be able to do that. So not a huge amount of hope for Papagiannis. But again, some improvement has been shown. Jason, who's your breakout candidate on this team? And you got a lot of young guys to choose from, but who's the guy that you think is, however you want to phrase breakout, you can use whatever criteria you want.
Well, I think as we've discussed, I personally don't see a great fantasy pick on this roster. I could see the team playing better. Certain guys, Temple might be the best guy tonight. Heald's the best guy another night. Scal has it this night, but consistently, I don't know that there's a great guy like that. But the one, and this is a little bit of a reach for me, Josh, because I haven't seen him play enough, but based on what other people are saying, based on how he's been able to fill up a stat page when he has played on international play, I think it's Bogdanović. And I you know, I don't know. I know he's not coming from any NBA experience, but I think this is a guy that can just jump on the scene and either be a high rotation minute guy or even get starters minutes. And I think he's going to shoot the ball well, be a little bit of a creator and playmaker, defend decently, and be a nice, nice addition to this team.
Yeah, I'm super pumped to see him on this team. Really, I think he's going to open a lot of people's eyes as they just think that he's a white European shooter that can't do anything else, but that's just not what he is. Like he offers a lot of different aspects to his game. So I'm super pumped to see him come across. I think there are some guys that look, they're probably the worst team in terms of fantasy to look at, but there are still value guys. Cauley Stein at that 93 spot on Yahoo is fine outside the top 100 on ESPN. I think that's a really good pick. I'll end up with him in a lot of spots. You know, Scallon, Bogdan with late picks. You want a big man or you want a passing wing. Either one of those guys is a solid option. Georgie Hill, if you're just looking for solid contribution, who could have top 50 early season value and then that maybe fades. Like you can grab him around the 80s or 90s. I think there's good value there with him, but there are some guys that are going a little bit high, and I touched on it already. Zach Randolph is probably the most overvalued player there. De'Aaron Fox at 108 is a waste of a pick, and for some reason, Justin Jackson and Harry Giles have got ADPs on ESPN, but I hope that's just because a couple of drafts of only two or three people have taken those guys, and they're not having any. Frank Mason's got an ADP as well, so I don't really understand what's going on with those guys. But there is some value there at that top end. You know, Cauley Stein, Hill. Hield is sort of where he needs to be. Bogdanović, Lapissiere. I think there's a little bit there, but you're not expecting high-end production from those players.
No. Yeah, and I think you said it best earlier, too. The one thing I would watch is the season. As it goes along, how they're being used, and then if it gets to February and March and you know, maybe the 8 seed is out of contention. It's something they can't get to. Well, what they did last year after the trade, they started playing everybody. So now all of a sudden, if Fox's minutes go from 18 to 27 or Jackson's minutes or Malachi Richardson or one of the guys just gets a huge boost in minutes, a late season pickup could be something that's productive for some of those young Kings.
Them and the Suns are going to be the two teams, I reckon, to really watch late season to see how these bench guys, or the minutes, how they start panning out. And there's a lot of interest on this Kings team for that sort of situation to see how Fox goes and Bogdanović and more minutes for Scal and maybe Justin Jackson and Malachi and all these guys. So there is a lot. There is a lot of interest in what they're going to do in that February-March period. Now, before you go, Jason, Vegas has set the line for this team at 28.5 wins. Are you going over or under?
Man, Vegas is good. It's probably the number, but they put a half in there, so I got to pick something. I'm going to go slightly over. I'm really a big fan of Dave Yeager. I think he really knows how to coach. It's going to be a challenge for him. I like the overall roster. I don't see a lot of high-level talent. That would concern me as far as, you know, just getting wins in an NBA grind. But I think this team is going to be together. I think it's going to have a great locker room. I think they've got a good mix of leaders and young talent. And the bottom line is, Josh, they need some of those young guys. Whatever combination, they're not all going to figure out and work out. But if they can get Willie and Scal and Fox to be a core, or over time to figure out what that young core is going to be, then kind of going through this reboot of trading Cousins will end up being worth it. So I'm going to lean towards slightly above. I wouldn't be shocked at all if it's below, but I could see him getting 29, maybe 30 as a ceiling. So I'll go with an over on the Kings, but just barely.
Yeah, it seems like one of those stay away sort of things. It's just not enough, exactly. Not enough room on either side of it to really be strong either way. Jason, let us know what's happening on Locked On Kings. Give us a plug for what's happening there.
Yeah, it's more of the same. I mean, this has just been so much fun for me. It's been a full year for me, and being able to talk to you and doing this is fun. All the guys across the network, and I'm just so excited that it's almost here. I love that they moved the season up a little bit. Camp's coming up. So, we, you know, just everything we've been doing, daily content on the Sacramento Kings and interviews and sound bites and game recaps when the season goes. It's just been trying a lot of different things. It's been a lot of fun and hopefully building that following of Kings fans out there and everybody on the Locked On Network.
So go and check out Locked On Kings and subscribe and do the same with this podcast, which you can do on Apple Podcasts, you can do it on Google Play, on TuneIn, on Stitcher, and on Spotify. And leave us both a 5-star review. It's a great way to help out the shows across the Locked On Podcast Network to help us grow and become more visible to people. So go check out Jason's show and, of course, subscribe to this show. Jason, thank you for coming on once again.
Thank you, Josh.
We are done, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Garrett Temple.
Hi, you've reached the High Fashion Hotline.
Hi, my family's going to a tailgate and I want our style to stand out from the crowd.
Just go to Old Navy.
Old Navy?
Yep, Old Navy's got all the latest fall styles. Plus, during Old Navy's colossal sale, you'll save up to 50% off store-wide.
Did you say up to 50% off?
I did, so don't sit on the sidelines. Old Navy has the perfect pants from $19, stylish dresses from $15, and comfy tees for the family from just $6 right now at Old Navy and OldNavy.com.
We're cheering for Old Navy.
High Fashion.
Old Navy.
Valid 10-2 to 10-10. Select styles only.